This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment on the topic of spirit, ideas flawless, claim perfection. There are three introductory quotes to the textbook of Christian Science by Mary Baker Eddy, and the first one are the words of Jesus, which states, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." The second one is by Shakespeare. "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And the third one by Mary Baker Eddy. "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." No matter what we're going to study, every possible topic that one could imagine, we still want to use the wisdom that is stated in these three introductory quotes. And being at the very beginning, before even the preface or the table of contents, it tells us that that really tells us what the entire textbook is all about. So we want to be searching for the truth, and if we find the truth about the particular topic of which we are studying, we will be free from the ignorance that could prevent us from healing, and we need to build up our consciousness, awareness that is within our consciousness, by making sure that we are only going to be entertaining wholesome thoughts. Because two different people can have opposite opinions looking at the same or considering the same topic. We want to make sure we're feeding our thoughts only with positive things, spiritual things about reality. And again, it's revealing what is already within consciousness but has been hidden if we are having a problem that is along the line of the topic. And if we do number one and two, we will then be blessed, as Mary Baker Eddy states. God will hear our prayer. What does that mean? It means that all of the laws of the universe are the laws of God. And if we follow the laws of God, we will be in alignment with God and will be able to benefit from all of the qualities of God. Mary Baker Eddy defines God on page 465, recapitulation chapter, as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, God is a great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. And on the same page, the definition of good: God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. We're talking about man being an idea of God. Therefore, let's take a look at the definition of man. Man, and this is from page 591 in the Key to the Scriptures, in the glossary. Man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. And what does the Bible tell us about man? Genesis chapter 1, starting with verse 26, it says, And God said, let us make man after our image and likeness. Therefore, God made man in his image and likeness. So we have to let the truth be revealed to us. It's already in consciousness. There's nothing new under the sun. The truth has always been true, but have we been aware of it? Are we aware that we are supposed to be reflecting God, the qualities of God, not the qualities of a false belief that man might be in some kind of discord or lack completeness? The title indicates Spirit, Ideas Flawless, Claim Perfection. Spirit is defined as flawless, and spirit has also been defined as the only real substance of everything. Not just a few things, but the only substance of everything that exists. And since ideas, and that's what everything is, an idea of God, since ideas all have a substance of spirit, then it is flawless. But we have to claim it. We have to claim it as our real substance. That it's perfect. If it's flawless, it has to be perfect. We have to go a little deeper than this, because we have to go back to a supposed activity called birth. If we consider ourselves material because we so-called came from a human mother, and it looks like we are made of matter, we can touch it, feel it, see it, all the five senses can perceive what appears as a body, and that appears to be material. Quantum physics, another name for quantum mechanics, around 1900, came to the conclusion that what appears to be matter is really energy that is vibrating at a high rate of speed. Even though it looks like it is opaque, it is really not real as matter. If we're reflecting the image and likeness of God, then we are a symbol for spirit, for the reflection of God, an individual manifestation of man, as the definition states. Man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. What's the definition of mind? The only I or us, the only spirit, soul, divine principle, substance, life, truth, love, the one God, not that which is in man, but the divine principle or God of whom man is the full and perfect expression. Deity, which outlines, but is not outlined. That's from page 591, which is the glossary, key to the scriptures. We need to eliminate false belief of anything at all that is from a material basis. We have to look upon birth as being a revelation of something we were not aware of previously. Life is like a circle. It's symbolized by a circle because there's no beginning or end in a circle. We have to think of ourselves as having a life that is without beginning or without end. And every segment of that circle is perfect. And we have to claim that perfection. A number in mathematics is not made up of matter. It's an idea. As many people as want to use that idea, whatever the number is, the same number can be used by an infinite number of people. No limitation. God's qualities are ideas. No limitation. We can all reflect those ideas. We cannot own them, because God does not give His ideas away. They are there to be reflected. Think about looking at a website. You see something on there. Maybe you're looking for ideas for recipes for food. Whoever the homemaker is. Usually it's the wife. But whoever it is, let's suppose you're looking for recipes. And there's a beautiful picture of just a plate full of food that looks like you could just eat it right off of the computer monitor. You can see it, but you can't touch it. It's like God. You can conceive of God through His qualities, but you can't grab it and take it. You can reflect it, but you cannot take a quality of God. You can reflect it and benefit from it because it has inherent qualities that you can study about, learn, and live them. And of course, that's the way to really remember anything, is to live them. Live what they mean. Live the qualities. If one takes a class from a real top expert in any field, they will probably find that the instructor repeats what he says. And he may phrase it a little differently, present it a little differently, but he's basically giving you the same idea more than once. Because he knows that if you just hear it once, you will probably not remember it very long if all you do is listen. But if you start using the idea, reflecting the idea in whatever it's involving doing, let's say you are doing research on tennis, and you get a new idea, or you're taking lessons from a pro. If all you do is take the lesson and forget about it, it won't do you any good. But if you utilize it the next tennis game you're in, then you have an opportunity to reflect that new idea. You're not taking the idea from the tennis pro, he can use it again to his very next student. He can keep providing that idea every time he has a student that is ready for that particular idea. Just like God. God does not give away the idea. It is there for us to reflect. We have to claim it as something that will benefit us, and practice it. Vladimir Kazanazy, one of the most famous pianists, a Russian, and he was asked in a question and answer period that he had in one of his performances, how is it that you can play with such perfection in every one of your performances. I've attended several, and they all are flawless. And this was a professional pianist. And he said, I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me. That's probably not a very good Russian accent. But that's what he does. He practices until the music plays him. That's what we have to do if we're studying about spirit and the ideas of spirit being flawless, and that we need to claim the perfection of a flawless spiritual idea in order for it to be playing us. In other words, every thought, speech, and action, if we do it with a spiritual atmosphere, it will have a spiritual influence on everything we do. And that's what we want to do. If we want to really learn about spirit, we need to think about it. We need to voice it, even if it's silently to ourselves or talking out loud if we're not interfering with someone else. Some people gain a lot from reasoning out loud instead of just silently. We have a section on the website, and by the way, the information on the website is in the footer. Just click on the icon that is about. And we have a very comprehensive menu in the top left corner of every page. So there's easy access to everything on the website. But we have a button on the website, both up in the header and in the footer, that says heal everything. And we give you step-by-step instructions on how you can build up your understanding of how to do exactly that. Since we have studied an excellent way to remember things, we've incorporated that into the instructions on how to learn how to heal everything. And it includes reading something or listening to it on MP3s, and then thinking about it, contemplating, what does it mean to you? And we recommend you take a very short amount of material, you know, maybe one or two sentences or one topic that might be one or two paragraphs. Contemplate it, and you record it in the original text. And after contemplating it, you record it based on what you think it means to you. And you always keep all your recordings, because you will see that new ideas will be revealed to you when you read it a second or a third or fourth time. And you would be amazed at how much more you learn when you record it. It's like there's something in a new dimension that takes control of your learning process. It's a wonderful improvement. So if you want to get the most out of anything you read that is very valuable information, doesn't matter what the topic is, whether it's Christian Science or physics or chemistry or playing tennis, doesn't matter. If you really want to embed it in your thought, then you record it. And then you put it in your own words and record that. If you want to really learn something, teach it. And then you have a new discipline. You open a new door of learning when you're teaching it. If you have an opportunity to do that, If you have children, you could teach them about Christian Science. And believe me, you will learn. I don't care if they're 3-year-old children that you start with, and teach them throughout their years, their impressionable years in particular, until they read on their own. As many senses as we have, seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, we should utilize them in our learning process. The more senses we use, the more we will learn. That's why talking is very important, which is recording. Listening to your own recordings, very important. Obviously, seeing, reading, or if you're going to only listen, some people say that they don't really enjoy reading. They may open up their door to enjoying it better. Or maybe they'll continue on. Everyone is unique. But we give you the basics that we know work. Everyone in the Institute has been in Christian Science their entire life. My parents were also in Christian Science since they were young. Everyone in our family, I have 3 sisters, all 4 of us had perfect attendance every year at school. Didn't miss a day. The school had never had one student that had perfect attendance all 12 years. And to have 4 all in the same family, it set a, obviously set a record for the school. We were exempted from taking any class that was studying about the body. Thank you for that exemption. The more you learn about the body from a materialistic standpoint, the more problems you're going to have. Jesus didn't talk about the body in terms of matter. In fact, John asked him if there was a material body. You're probably aware that John was the most advanced student of Jesus. And he also asked him, is there a material universe? And we have the documentation on our website about that, because it's not in the Bible. In fact, it's under lock and key, being exhibited in a museum in London, under guard 24/7. But we have all the information on our website, and you'll find it very interesting. You'll probably be able to figure out the answer just from the topic and what has been already said in this recording. But we have to start at what we think is the beginning of our life. And we have to build a foundation based on what this subject is, spirit. And ideas, and being flawless. And we have to claim our perfection. Mary Baker Eddy says that we are barraged with suggestions all the time to get our thought off of spirit and onto matter. She suggests that we think of a model, the perfect model that we can jump to and think about, contemplate it, whenever we have any kind of a problem come up. Anything. Go to that perfect model. Compose it of some of these definitions and quotes that I'm sharing with you in this prayer treatment. And reason. Mary Baker Eddy says, human reasoning is the most productive facility for man. Because what we need to do is we need to reason out of false beliefs. We cannot remember and think that the universal belief about birth, being a male and female, getting together and creating matter, and that incubates and grows and that's the baby that grows up and matures, peaks out, deteriorates, and disappears. If that's going to be our concept of life, then we are going to be experiencing the ups and downs of life. But if we practice, like Vladimir Kazanazi, until the music plays us, until the real spiritual birth or revelation is embedded in thought so deeply that we automatically revert to that and reject that anything unlike God can be real, we will have a totally different life. You can be a race car driver, a motorcycle racer, be in a high-risk profession or hobby, and never have an accident. If you have the right kind of model that is guiding your thought, life is living. It's not being passive. It is living. Living the qualities of God. Those definitions that were recited to you of God, there are seven main terms: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And as a real quick summary, mind is anything to do with thinking, anything that is mental. Spirit is anything to do with substance. Soul is anything to do with identification, utilizing the five senses. Now, if we're really at a higher level than just average, then we will think about spiritual senses instead of so-called material senses. Spiritual seeing instead of material seeing. Spiritual hearing. Hearing means understanding. We have a complete page on the five spiritual senses. And as you learn more and more about the writings of Mary Baker Eddy, which is really a scientific interpretation of the Bible, she was on her deathbed due to a fall in the ice. She was not expected to live. They had two or three doctors tending to her. She was not expected to live. She had been interested in the Bible ever since she was a very young girl. And she heard a voice that called her, Mary. She went to her mother, thought her mother called her. I don't know what she was, 5, 6, 7 years old. And her mother said, no, I didn't call you. But the next time you hear it, answer. Here I am. I'm listening. She was so frail that she missed almost all of school. But she was very well educated by the help of one brother and her own effort to learn. She was an avid reader. Started writing poetry at a very young age. We need to cultivate what we're thinking about. We need to nurture higher and higher levels of atmosphere. And we need to claim our perfection instead of just accepting the universal belief that we were born out of matter. And that we're going to have these ups and downs. We don't have to. You can have children that go to school 12 years and have perfect attendance every year. Girls and boys. Doesn't matter. Every problem can be overcome. The last 101 pages of the textbook, starting at 600 including the pages 600 through 700, provides testimonies that are all verified, and they've been in the textbook since 1910, so 115 years, and they're still in there. Nobody sued to prove that they weren't true. Millions and millions of people have been healed by studying Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy calls it also divine metaphysics. And she says on page 146, divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. And on page 330, she says there are 32 planks to the platform of divine metaphysics. And if you learn and understand those planks, you will be able to demonstrate Christian Science. You will be able to demonstrate divine metaphysics. You will be able to provide the healing that is needed. But she says you have to live both the letter and the spirit. The letter is what you read, the system, the definitions, everything that's in the textbook and her other writings. And obviously this is an infinite topic because God is infinite. And you're learning about God. But when you start learning and understand even a little bit, you will see improvement in your life. You have to be a point in your sense of reasoning and consciousness that you say, I've been down the route of matter and material sense and mortal limited thinking. I want to get something better. I want a higher dimension. I want to open up new doors starting right now, whenever you're ready to start. And when you are realizing that you want to cultivate something that is at a higher dimension, then you will start to learn. You have to make the effort. So that's the letter. What is the spirit all about? Suppose you want to make a suggestion. Maybe you're the wife or the husband in a family, and you want to make a suggestion to your spouse. Would you say it in a kind, gentle, loving manner, or a rude, rough, strong manner? That's pretty easy to answer. Well, that's what we're talking about, the spirit. What is the atmosphere that you are creating when you think, talk, and act? Are you going to be considerate of the one you're talking to? Are you going to do it in a kind manner? Are you going to be like you're a boxer in a prize fight for the championship and knock them out before they even hear what you want to say? I think if there's one word to describe the synonym that Jesus utilized, reflected, that stood out above all others, you'll probably agree, it was love. When the soldiers came to arrest him for the trial and then the crucifixion, Peter cut the ear off of one of the soldiers. Jesus said, put up thy sword. He healed the ear instantly. His disciples asked him, Master, how many times should we forgive someone? 7? He said, 70 times 7. I mean, you're going to get tired of counting. So you'll just say, okay, well, I will always forgive. How can you forgive? You have to condemn. What are you going to forgive if you've not condemned? Are you going to forgive something that they did against someone else? That's not your business. We have to condemn before we have to think about forgiving. A lot easier to forget about condemning. Then you don't have to be concerned with forgiving. You don't have you don't have condemnation in your being unless you utilize it. If you want to destroy yourself, all you have to do is hate someone, because that destroys the hater. Hate destroys the hater. It's like looking in a mirror. It reflects back on you. Whoever's doing the hating is the one that suffers from hating. Chapter 12 in the textbook is on Christian Science practice. The very first text in that chapter talks about Mary Magdalene. She's the one that had a past of ill repute, and she transformed and was one of six people that came to the crucifixion of Jesus, along with the mother of Jesus and John, the only disciple that showed up, and three others. That's a story of love, Mary Magdalene, and forgiveness. Mary Baker Eddy wrote an article in one of her largest books called Love Your Enemies. She said, who is thine enemy except someone that you imagine to be your enemy? Jesus was attacked all the time. He was introducing ideas that, wow, it knocked everybody off their feet. They rejected him. They had a very difficult time. As soon as he was crucified, his disciples went back to fishing. Boy, they didn't stick around at all. The atmosphere is really as important as learning any of the text. One without the other is insufficient to be successful. Einstein said, religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. Do you know of another religion that has a foundation of science that can actually teach you how to heal anything? I don't know of one. I've looked at a number of different religions just doing research. None of them. Not a single one. I invested quite a bit in software to study, and I paid an extra goodly amount for supposedly the best Bible scholars who translated the Bible, explaining what the meaning was of the whole Bible. There were many different authors involved. One was supposedly an expert on one book of the Bible and another one on another book. Maybe someone would have two or three books that they translated. And they were all basing it on a literal interpretation of the text. How can you take the most spiritual book that has been around and read by the most people of all time, the Bible, and try to understand it on a material basis? Did Jesus act in a material way when he healed people? Did he conduct his life in a materialistic way? Or was he a dimension above matter? He had a spiritual view of everyone. He couldn't have done any healing if he had a material view. He didn't go to any medicine men. He didn't recommend other people to go to medicine men to be healed. He healed through his understanding of God, his understanding of God's reflection, God's manifestation, which is man. Genesis chapter 1 says God gave man dominion over everything. The son of a very excellent Christian Scientist founded an organization, the mother did, and the son says, think of your body as your servant, as an office boy that goes here and does this and goes there and does that and whatever's needed. In other words, the body is not in control of us. We are in control of everything. Our own thinking, our speech, our actions, and any tools that we need to use, such as the thing that we've got with two legs and two arms. Also our face. Do we carry our head around with a big smile on it? We've got a lot of reasons to, especially when you start studying the system of divine metaphysics. You will be opening brand new dimensions to your life. You will find that you will eliminate a lot of problems and you'll have a much happier existence because you will be gaining independence and control, or you're yielding control to God, to the laws of God, like Ashkenazi. Practice until the music plays you. Practice makes perfect. Use as many senses as you can to focus on the spiritual as opposed to the material. The material is what we have been educated to believe is real. But what is real is what is invisible. What we see and can touch and so forth, that's only a symbol for what's underneath. A tree reflects the qualities of God. Someone riding a bicycle, they're reflecting the balance of principle. Someone playing tennis, they're reflecting the qualities of life. I visited a longtime friend who was an excellent practitioner, and I'd arranged to be there because I lived about 1,000 miles away, and I told them I was coming to town and wondering if she and her husband would have time that I could visit them. And when I knocked on the door, they were watching the Summer Olympics, and she answered the door and said, we're watching it, would you like to watch it with us for a while? And there was, and of course I did, and they were featuring acrobatics, and she says, look at the grace. She was automatically thinking of qualities. She told me one time, qualities, qualities. All is qualities. Is singular because everything is unified. So that's the atmosphere. The individual that was performing was so graceful in everything she was doing. So smooth, everything was connected with perfection. That's what we want to be. We want to be smooth. We don't want to be rough. We want to be gentle and kind. Try being rough like a lumberjack or something when you talk to your wife if you're a man, or a woman talking to your husband, and see if that brings about a harmonious relationship. If you had one before, you probably are going to break the string of goodness by speaking in a rough tone. Mary Baker Eddy translates, gives us a spiritual sense of the Lord's Prayer. And the very first verse is, Our Father which art in heaven. And she translates that to mean, Our Father, Mother, God. God is not a man. God is not a woman. God is an idea. But he is expressing the qualities of both male and female and child. The innocence of a child, the trust of a child, the gentle and kindness and love that is typically assigned to a woman, and the strength and the courage, perseverance, that's generally qualities assigned to a man. If we're going to be a complete reflection of God, we've got to have all of those qualities. At the right time, we need to exude with innocence and trust as a child. Jesus loved to have children around him that he was teaching because they were so receptive. And if we're a man talking to a wife, we'll have a much more harmonious relationship if we're kind and gentle. But if there's a need for our wife to show courage and strength, it would be good if she had cultivated those qualities so it would be natural for her to do it. Just like it should be natural for the man to be expressing the female qualities of gentleness and kindness at the right time. The system of divine metaphysics is basically cultivating the science that Jesus used in his healings. They were not miracles. They were very natural. But they were science. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy delivered to the world. The science of the healings of Jesus. How did he do it? There are three noted Christian Scientists on our website. We have over 100. And three of them had 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the healing was done. One of them had been a practitioner for 35 years, conducting themselves that way. Another one, 16 years, that there's a record of them doing that. And then they move to another area. And they don't talk about that after that. But they were called into a Christian Science nursing home by one of the patients there. And when he arrived, the receptionist said, Why are you here? I guess they had basically closed the door to everybody because of what I'll tell you in a moment. And he said, Well, I got a call from such and such, and she asked me to come over because she needed some assistance in healing. She said, Well, you can't go in there. He said, Why? She said, Everyone's sick with a contagious disease. You go in there, you're going to come out and you've got a problem. He said, How many people do you have here? She told him, Several hundred. He said, Well, that's only one problem. He went over and sat down in the reception area doing his mental work. And in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out saying, What happened? Everyone is healed, all at the same time. There's no evidence that they were ever sick. He's one of the three that had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith. The first one was Wentworth Winslow, the one had been in practice for 35 years, and Frederick L. Rawson. Frederick L. Rawson wrote a book called Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, and it lists 1,315 different ailments with the label on it that is given to it by the medical profession, each one of those 1,315. And then tells you what the spiritual solution is to heal it. but it's advised not to read the complete chapter that's called Applied Treatment, because then you will embed in your thought all of these diseases and all these problems. And you only want to look up any problem that you are having a problem with that you want to work on healing. He figured out how to go back in time and heal. He was so advanced. We have it all described on our website, mbeinstitute.org. 15 minutes. They all had those appointments, and the individual was healed when they walked out of their office. We're probably talking 40 people a day that they healed. You know, 1,000 people a month, 12,000 people a year. 35 years in business, boy, there are a lot of people involved. Spirit, ideas, flawless, claim perfection. Remember, we have to do the spirit and the letter. We have to be practicing love. What is love? It's giving. Learning a life of giving. Living a life of giving. Hate is living a life of taking. You have a fear that there's not enough to go around, so you have to take everything you can get. But when you learn how to give and the value of giving, you will have a smile on your face that nobody can wipe off, because you will be joyful. The greatest joy anyone can possibly have is to give anonymously, where you know the individual is in need. I know someone that walked out of a department store, and there was a lady that had her daughter there in a wheelchair. She had no control of herself, the daughter. He made a generous donation to him, and then he went home. And on his way home, he was thinking about, they didn't speak the same language, by the way, and he was thinking about, how can I be of greater help than just giving him money? He decided that he would print out the first couple of chapters of the textbook in their language, and he gave it to her the next time he was at the store, which was a few days later. She was very polite and said thank you. He knew enough of their language that he understood that. And he went back a few days later when he was visiting the store for shopping. And she had a lovely smile on her face. And she was reading it when he walked up to her and her daughter. So he decided he would print out the last chapter on fruitage that listed 85 different testimonies of 486 different healings. Chapter 18. The last chapter in the book, pages 600 to 700. And she accepted it graciously. But when he went back the next time that he was going to the store, she got up out of her chair and gave him a bear hug, expressed so much gratitude, because supposedly her daughter was experiencing an incurable problem. And she was so uplifted by reading some of the things in that chapter 18 where people had serious problems that she had hope. Mary Baker Eddy went shopping for chairs, had an appointment with the owner of the store, with her right-hand household gal that was working on her CSD, Doctorate of CS, from Mary Baker Eddy, living in her home with Mary Baker Eddy, along with I don't know, probably 15 other people. And they went together to visit the owner of this store where they were going to order chairs. And after the meeting was over, Laura asked Mary Baker Eddy, why she wasn't paying any attention to the conversation. She said, did you see that man? Apparently he had something very visible that showed that he had a problem. I don't know what it was. She didn't say. It could have been a growth on his face or something that was visible that showed that it was certainly in need of healing. She said, that's what I was focusing on. I was focusing on healing, not on chairs. If we're going to live a life of giving, we need to be alert to people that are in need. They're all around. Are you smiling and very joyful to the checkout clerk? I mean, she's doing or he's doing a very routine thing. Probably sees hundreds of people a day, maybe very tired, who knows. But a smile and a pleasant thank you could be just what they needed for an uplift. And how about at the stores I go to, they have baggers, you know, that put your things together for you. And it looks like they're living off of their tips. Are you generous? The Bible says we should tithe, which means a tenth part. But were you an average student in school? Or were you a B student or an A plus? Maybe you were the number one in the class? Well, if you want to be number one in the system of divine metaphysics, you need to be forgetting a limitation of 10%. And tithe doesn't necessarily mean money. It's everything. Everything. 10% of your time. Or 20% or 30% if you want to be a B or an A student. How about clothes? Do you have any new clothes that have never been worn that you decided you didn't want to keep? Do you have an extra car? Extra house? A lump sum of money? Did you just inherit money? Have you thought about giving part or all of that away? Do you have any special talents that you can teach someone else? Do you know someone that doesn't have transportation and you can help them along that line? Maybe share taking the kids to school if that's what you need to do in the area where you live. If we are really desirous of living a life of love, we will be alert to an innumerable number of ways that we can live a life of giving. There's no limit if we really want to live a life of giving. And there's no limit to the quantity we give or the type of giving we give. The more infinite we think, the more we get rid of a sense of limitation or fear that there's not enough. So we've got to get everything we can get. We should be more concerned with giving everything we can give. Like the lady that walked into a synagogue, and Jesus commented that she gave more than everyone else. Because she gave all she had. It was 2 mites. In today's dollars, it's 1 penny. That's all she had, and she gave it all. If you are like almost everyone else in the whole planet Earth, you give away nothing. Most people give nothing, or very tiny amounts. Your life is up to you. Everyone has to work out their own salvation. You can't work out mine. I can't work out yours. No one else can work out yours. You can't work out the salvation of someone else. Now, if you've got a dependent, like children, then you have a responsibility to be upbringing them correctly, giving them a spiritual foundation, teaching them the value of learning to give. But otherwise, if it's an adult, they need to work out their own salvation. Although certainly giving means we should give them a hand up. But as far as trying to control their thought, that's the wrong approach. Mary Baker Eddy gave seven prayers called the Diapason of Heaven to her last class in the metaphysical college that she established. And the last class was in 1898. And each one was focusing on one of the seven synonymous terms. This particular prayer treatment has been on the synonymous term of spirit. So I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven for spirit. And that will conclude this prayer treatment on the topic of spirit, ideas, flawless, and claim perfection. Diapason of Heaven with a focus on spirit by Mary Baker Eddy. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen. It is Friday afternoon, 1418, September 26, 2025. Thank you for listening to this prayer treatment on spirit, ideas, flawless, claim perfection. The end.